day, God can be the perfect portion of everything we need, every longing we have, every desperate desire our souls cry out for. God will be our portion. With this in mind, let's revisit a few of the emotional struggles we noted earlier that can often trigger a gluttonous response. My boyfriend breaks up with me. Instead of grabbing a tub of ice cream, I ask God to be my daily portion of companionship in this lonely time. God, I hate this rejection and hurt. Sometimes I feel like the loneliness is going to swallow me alive. I can't deal with this on my own. Will you be my portion of healing and companionship just for this day? That big business deal falls through. Instead of ordering the pasta dish drowning in cream sauce at lunch, I ask God to be my portion of strength to order the grilled chicken salad. I pray, God, I so desperately want comfort right now, and that pasta with cream sauce seems like it would be so comforting. It hurts so much that I've lost this deal. Feeling like a failure makes me want to say, who cares, and eat whatever. Will you be my portion of comfort and strength and success in this moment? My kids are driving me crazy. Instead of wolfing down 3 pieces of chocolate cake, I pray, God, I so desperately want to be a patient mom. I don't know if I can be a patient mom the rest of my life, but with your portion of strength, I can rely on you in this moment and not try to medicate my shortcomings with food. Whatever the situation, I keep asking God to be my daily portion of companionship, provision, patience, over and over, and one day I will find victory over those things instead of just looking back over a pile of tears and cake crumbs. Here's a biblical promise we can rely on. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion, therefore I will wait for him. Lamentations chapter 3, verses 22 through 24. Grasping the truth that God is our portion has the potential to transform more than just our eating habits. It can transform our responses to every aspect of our lives. Practicing God's portion control was crucial for the spiritual development of the Israelites, and it's crucial for our spiritual development as well. God doesn't mince words about his expectations or his promises. You shall have no foreign god among you. You shall not bow down to an alien god. I am the Lord your God, who brought you up out of Egypt. Open wide your mouth, and I will fill it. Psalm chapter 81, verses 9 through 10. Whether we are talking about food, wine, sex, shopping, or anything else with which we try to fill ourselves, nothing in this world can ever fill us like God's portion. Nothing else can truly satisfy. Nothing else is unfailing and absolute. And I don't say all this with a quirky little smile, hoping it works. I shout it from the depths of my soul because I know it works. For he satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. Psalm chapter 107, verse 9. Personal Reflections. 1. What are the unspoken truths about food at your church or in your circle of Christian friends? In terms of how they eat and relate to food, is your Christian community an asset or a liability to your healthy eating goals? 2. Gluttony of any kind, food, alcohol, drugs, sex, could be described as a desperate attempt to silence the cries of a hungry soul. Have you ever thought of overeating in this way, as an attempt to silence your hungry soul? How might this perspective help you gain new insights about your battles with food? 3. If your soul is like a ravenous vacuum cleaner, what kinds of things has it sucked up over the years in its longing to be filled? 4. Lisa uses the Exodus story to demonstrate how God taught his people to depend on him by giving them just what they needed each day. Pages 131 through 132. In what ways might this story be an encouragement to you? Are you in the habit of depending on God for what you need each day? To be your daily portion of companionship, provision, strength? What manna do you long for most from God? 5. Have there been times in your life when you struggled because you didn't have what you needed? How might these experiences of deprivation impact your ability to trust that God can give you what you need each day to deal with food? 6. For he satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. Psalm chapter 107, verse 9. How do you respond to this promise? If you could ask God for one good thing that would help you to feel a deep and soul-filling satisfaction, what would it be? Chapter 14. Emotional Emptiness. Sometimes people struggle with food because they eat too much of the wrong kinds of foods, and they consume more calories than their body needs. When their energy output is less than their food intake, the excess is stored as fat. 1 pound of fat is equivalent to 3,500 calories, which makes gaining or losing weight a pretty straightforward mathematical equation. In order to lose weight, we need to burn more calories than we consume so our stored fat is burned off as fuel. And while all this is as true for me as the next person, there are things that make the prospect of losing weight a little more complicated for me than just the numbers. Somewhere behind all that math, a less measurable force is at work within me. It takes the form of emptiness or lack. As I trace my fingers back across the timeline of my life, I can remember times when spiritual and emotional emptiness left me vulnerable. The shape of my lack was the absence of a biological father. It was as if someone held up my family photo and excised his form from our lives with laser-like precision. There we were, my mom, my sister, and me, with this misshapen family and a hole that extended way deeper than an excised photograph. All of him was gone. His face that should have looked upon his children with adoration, his arms that should have worked to provide for us, his feet that I should have been allowed to stand on while he danced me around the den, his mind that should have shared wisdom about why pet hamsters die and why boys sometimes break girls' hearts, his heart that should have been filled with compassion and desire to shelter us from the storms that scared us so. He took with him so much more than he ever could have imagined. Those few suitcases and plastic crates didn't just contain boxers, ties, old trophies, and dusty books. Somewhere in between his Old Spice and office files were shattered pieces of a little girl's heart. Now, I'm not a big fan of pointing to hurts from my childhood and saying, all my issues can be linked back to what other people did to me. Let me cut open my hurts and wallow in all that leaks out. At some point, I came to the realization that everyone has hurts from their past, and everyone has the choice to either let those past hurts continue to haunt and damage them, or to allow forgiveness to pave the way for us to be more compassionate toward others. But the reality of my dad's abandonment created some unhealthy habits that continued to linger in my life. Emptiness has a way of demanding to be filled. And when I couldn't figure out how to fill what my heart was lacking, my stomach was more than willing to offer a few suggestions. Food became a comfort I could turn on and off like a faucet. It was easy, it was filling, it was available, it became a pattern, and somehow, each time my heart felt a little empty, my stomach picked up the cues and suggested I feed it instead. When I decided to get healthy with my eating, I started by praying a very simple prayer. Unsettle me. I'll talk more about this prayer in chapter 17. But I mention it now because during my unsettling process, I became aware of how emotional emptiness is a trigger for my eating. Much of this emotional emptiness stemmed back to that little girl coming home from school and being told, "Your daddy's gone." That one event was so huge, so draining, that it caused me to fill my mind with only negative memories of my dad. In my mind, he never loved me at all. And you know what? Maybe he didn't. But parking my mind only on negative thoughts about my dad left such a sadness in my heart. Though I've been touched by Jesus and my soul filled with God's good perspective and healing truths, there was still this very human part of me that felt so incredibly sad when I thought about what never was with my daddy. Sometimes I could brush off this sadness with a little sigh and recitation of who I am in Christ, but other times it made me angry and defensive and hungry and deeply unsatisfied. I honestly never thought anything but sadness was ever possible with my dad. I'd reached out to him with a few phone calls and letters over the years, but no miraculous restoration ever took place. No beautiful ending where he suddenly knocks on my door and says, "I'm sorry." No note that finally made its way to me after years of being lost that read, "I've always loved you." No beautiful crescendo of music as the story of my life with Dad suddenly reads, "Happily ever after." None of that. Just unresolved hurt and this nagging feeling that his absence was partially due to me not being what he wished I would have been. That's a heavy weight for a little girl to carry. That's a heavy weight even for us big girls. Then one day God surprised me in the most unusual way. As I said, I'd been praying for God to unsettle me and make me aware of all those places I'd resigned were impossible to change. And while my dad still made no effort to connect with me, a sweet memory of him changed my dark perspective. Last winter, Art and I traveled to Vermont, where I woke up one morning to stare at what an overnight snowstorm brought us. I had never seen such snow in all my life. But what really caught my attention were the gigantic icicles hanging from the roofline. They were glorious. As I stared out at them, suddenly, a memory of my dad flashed across the screen of my mind. I grew up in Florida, which meant no snow ever. But I remember praying for snow, praying like a revival preacher at a tent meeting, I tell you. If ever there could be snow in Florida, surely a passionate little girl's prayers could open up those heavenly storehouses where all snowflakes are kept. One night the temperatures dropped surprisingly low and the weatherman called for a freeze, which was a rare thing in our area. How tragic there was no precipitation. It was the one night that snow might have been possible. It broke my little snow bunny heart. But the next morning, I awoke to the most amazing sight. There were icicles everywhere. Gleaming, dripping, hanging, light-reflecting, glorious icicles were all over the trees in our backyard. It was magical. We were the only house on the block with this grand winter display. Because I was the only girl whose daddy thought to intentionally put sprinklers out on the one night it froze. I don't know where this memory had been hiding for too many years, but what a gift. Somewhere in the deep, mysterious, broken places of my dad's heart, there was an inkling of love. And while this certainly doesn't solve all the complications of being abandoned by my dad, it gives me a healthy thought to dwell on where he's concerned, one of those good thoughts the Bible tells us to think about. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. I like to call this parking my mind in a better spot. It's so easy to park our minds in bad spots, to dwell and rehash and wish things were different. But to think on hard things keeps us in hard spots and only serves to deepen our feelings of emotional emptiness. This is where pity parties are held, and we all know pity parties demand an abundance of high-calorie delights, eaten and eaten some more. But pity parties are a cruel way to entertain, for they leave behind a deeper emptiness than we started with in the first place. And there I would sit with a guilt-ridden mind, a bloated stomach, an empty heart, and a soul full of anger that my dad was continuing to hurt me even all these years later. But this icicle memory gave me a new place to park, a place where I could pursue truth rather than chocolate, a place where lovely could be something besides nachos in the Taco Bell drive-thru, and excellent could be my victorious response of turning to habits such as prayer, reading scriptures, and exercising away my stress rather than snacking away my emptiness. What about you? Do you have something from your past that causes emotional emptiness? As a first step toward healing, can you think of one good thing from this past situation? Or maybe something good that has happened despite the pain from the event? If not, ask God to give you some good place to park your mind with this draining issue from your past. Then try walking through the following exercise based on Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Here's how I did this with the emptiness I felt about my dad. Whatever is true. My dad was broken. Only broken daddies leave their children. This isn't a reflection of me. It's simply a sad reflection of the choices he made. But it's also true that he had to reach past his brokenness that one night to set up the sprinklers for his little girl. And as small as this one act is, it was an act of love. Whatever is noble. I don't have to live as a child of a broken parent the rest of my life. I can live as a daughter of the King of Kings, who not only wants me but has promised to never, ever leave me. As a matter of fact, the Bible promises me the Lord is near, Philippians chapter 4, verse 5. And the Lord was near the night of sprinklers. Though my dad professed to be an atheist, I'm convinced Jesus broke through his tough exterior that night and was near to him. Even if he didn't receive Jesus, my dad was near enough one night to see how beautiful love can be. I hope Dad remembers. Whatever is right. Everything right and good in this life has God's touch on it. It makes me smile to think there must have been two sets of fingerprints on that old, rusty yellow sprinkler that night. My biological daddy carried it, set it up, and turned it on. But my heavenly daddy made sure the sprinkler was positioned just right to form icicles that froze the trees and warmed my heart. Whatever is pure. God has set eternity in the heart of every human being. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11. So, even with all the darkness that seemed to surround my dad, some pure light of selflessness broke through and gave evidence of something good working within him. Warmth on a cold night. Purity in the midst of messy sin. Broken hearts and tainted lives. Whatever is lovely. God can take ugly and build lovely from it. After all, he's called the potter, right? From the dust of the earth, he formed human beings. He healed a blind man by rubbing mud on the ailing man's eyes. That is a lovely quality about God. That lovely spilled over and helped my dad think of icicles. Really lovely icicles. And in the midst of a backyard that never saw games of catch, a treehouse, or father-daughter talks, there was once a glorious display of lovely that only we had. Whatever is admirable, excellent, or praiseworthy. I wouldn't say my dad was admirable, excellent, or praiseworthy. But then again, maybe I should. Maybe like the icicles, there are other memories long forgotten and covered over by the darkness of his cruel departure. In the end, my Lord has taken those shattered pieces of my heart and removed them from the boxes my dad carried away that awful day. Piece by piece, God has created a mosaic in my heart, one of restoration, healing, and compassion. I am the person I am today in part because of the hurt of being left behind by my dad. I wouldn't have chosen that piece of my mosaic, but how good of God to place right beside the hurt a clear piece of glass shaped like those warm icicles from so long ago. A memory I can think on. A memory that fills me better than any piece of chocolate cake or nacho chips. A memory that is true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, and praiseworthy. And filling. So, back to that mathematical equation from earlier. I'm no math whiz, but I do remember there being these things called polynomials. Polynomials are algebraic expressions that include real numbers and variables. That's the way my food issues are. They contain real numbers and variables. I suspect yours do as well. And while we must pay attention to the real numbers by eating less and moving more, we would do well to consider the variables in our lives as well. We must deal with our triggers. We must identify our places of emotional emptiness and admit how futile it is to try to fill those places with food. I realize what I've written here is but a first step in the process. Often these issues are big and complicated and a bit like peeling back the layers of an onion. Just when you think you've tackled a piece of it, you realize there are many layers yet to go. If you need more help, be honest with yourself and seek out a good Christian counselor. Often churches can recommend counselors in your area that base their advice on biblical truths. I wouldn't be where I am today without seasons I spent getting counselors to speak truth into my life. But for today, finding a gentle memory in the midst of a mess is a good start. A really good start. One that is lovely and true and worth looking for. So, Dad, should you ever stumble upon these words, I pray you remember the night of the icicle wonder. For it is a common thread of hope that ties two very distant hearts together. And that makes me smile. Personal Reflections. 1. Each time my heart felt a little empty, my stomach picked up on the cues and suggested I feed it instead. Page 138. Do you feel a similar connection between feelings of emotional emptiness and physical hunger? Do you feel you are able to distinguish between physical hunger and emotionally triggered hunger? Or does it all feel the same to you? Number 2. Lisa describes how she used the phrases of Philippians chapter 4, verse 8 to park her mind in a better spot about the painful relationship with her father. Using the phrases below and Lisa's example as a guide, pages 141 through 143, invite God to give you a better place to park your mind about a painful experience from your own past. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, excellent, or praiseworthy. Number 3. A mosaic is a work of art made up of hundreds or thousands of tiny broken pieces of glass or ceramic tile. Lisa describes how God is making a mosaic of restoration and healing in her heart, gathering up her broken pieces and making them into something beautiful. Can you imagine God doing something like this in your heart? If God used the broken pieces of your life to make a beautiful image, What do you hope it would look like? Chapter 15. The Demon in the Chips Poster. In the past three chapters, we've been talking about replacing the old go-to scripts of rationalization with truth. Maybe I'm the only crazy dieter full of rationalizations. But there's one more we must address, and it's this. If no one sees you, then the calories don't count. I know this makes absolutely no logical sense. But girlfriend, sneaking when no one else is looking will absolutely kill a healthy eating plan. So, when I hear this rationalization playing out in my head, I don't try to replace it with another go-to script. Instead, I flee. I have to remove myself from the vicinity of the temptation. Remember, this isn't just a battle in the physical and mental realm. This battle is spiritual as well. Satan wants us to sneak things in secret. Things hidden and done in secret clues the Father of Darkness into our weaknesses and opens the door for him to assault us with targeted schemes. That's why the Apostle Paul wrote, "Be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes." Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 11. Here's how pastor and author Chip Ingram characterizes Satan's schemes. They are orchestrated in order to tempt us, deceive us, draw us away from God, fill our hearts with half-truths and untruths, and lure us into pursuing good things in the wrong way, at the wrong time, or with the wrong person. The English word strategies is derived from the Greek word Paul uses that is translated schemes. That means our temptations are not random. The false perspectives we encounter do not come at us haphazardly. The lies we hear, the conflicts we have with others, the cravings that consume us when we are at our weakest points, they are all part of a plan to make us casualties in the invisible war. They are organized, below-the-belt assaults, designed to neutralize the very people God has filled with his awesome power. Did you catch what Chip included in his last of Satan's specific schemes? Cravings that consume us when we are at our weakest points. Yet, we must remember we hold a power greater than any craving we face. Just the other night I faced one of my fiercest battles with this. I had a busy day and decided to grab takeout at one of my favorite restaurants on my way home. I ordered grilled fish and steamed broccoli. Pleased with my choice and my self-discipline, I proceeded to the pickup area. That's when the assault started. A giant poster of the best chips and salsa you've ever seen was hanging over the takeout register. The girl behind the counter was trying to ask if I needed plasticware and to confirm my order was correct. Inside my brain, a weak-willed woman started screaming, "No! My order is not correct! I need chips. Lots and lots of those chips. I need that salt. I want that crunch. With every fiber in my being, I want to shove this fish and broccoli back across the counter and demand chips." It was like those chips were dancing in front of me and singing the words from that 80s tune, "Don't you want me, baby? Don't you want me? Oh, oh." I wanted to start reciting that old script in my head that would justify me right into a chips frenzy. "You've had such a hard day. You've been good for so long. Who would ever know? And if no one else knows, the calories don't really count, right? Plus, it's just one order of chips and salsa. Everything else you ordered is so healthy. One order of chips can't possibly be that bad. Just do it this time and then be good for the next couple of days." I wanted to play that script. I wanted the chips. But something else was tugging at my mind. Truth. Lots of scriptures we've already covered came to mind. They sprang forward and started doing battle with the old script trying to lead me astray. I could feel the tension, literally, as I stood there taking way too long to answer the girl about whether or not I needed a plastic fork. Truth and lies were fighting for my attention. That's when it occurred to me. I held the power to determine who would win. I held the power, not the chips. And the power was to acknowledge that I am not yet at a place where I can handle just a few chips. My brokenness cannot support that kind of freedom. Therefore, I had to flee. I had to remove myself from the source of temptation, and I had to do it immediately. My hollow stare suddenly became an unwavering look of determination. Yes, I do need a fork with this fish and broccoli. I can picture the girl rolling her eyes as she bent down to get my fork, wondering, what kind of Fruit Loop has to think for such an inappropriate amount of time about whether or not she needs a fork? But I wasn't focused on her or her quizzical expression. Instead, I forced myself to focus on walking out that door. As I drove home, one verse kept coming to mind. They gave in to their craving. They put God to the test. Psalm chapter 106, verse 14. In my mind, I repeated it over and over, until my healthy dinner and I were far away from the demon disguised as a chips and salsa poster. By the time I got home and filled myself with the healthy fish and steamed broccoli, I realized I had no desire for chips and salsa. None. I was satisfied with my healthy choices. So, what made the difference? Let's take a closer look at that verse in Psalms. In the desert, they gave in to their craving. In the wasteland, they put God to the test. The desert is a place of deprivation. In a deprived state, we are much more likely to give in to things we shouldn't. I was really hungry when I walked into that restaurant, which made those chips and salsa look even better than usual. I was in a weakened state and faced with something that could instantly and easily fill me. That's what I call a danger zone. Inside a danger zone, the lies and rationalizations of the enemy sing so sweetly. Alluring sights and smells coupled with salivating taste buds, specifically arranged by the enemy for my destruction. Without trying to be overly dramatic, this is the exact point at which I must start reciting truth, pack up my fish and broccoli, and flee. Flee, I tell you, literally and deliberately flee. I had to stop thinking about what I shouldn't have and park my mind on thoughts of being thankful for what I could have. I could have delicious grilled fish and steamed broccoli, food that is healthy and beneficial for giving my body strength. We must embrace the boundaries of the healthy eating plan we choose. We must see them as parameters that define our freedom with things like grilled fish and broccoli, not as horrible restrictions keeping us from chips and salsa. And we must affirm these boundaries as a gift from a God who cares about our health, not restrictive fences meant to keep us from enjoying life. Vulnerable, broken taste buds can't handle certain kinds of freedom. So, boundaries keep us safe, not restricted. I learned this through our sweet little dog, Chelsea. She is not the brightest bulb in the lamp around cars driving down our long driveway. Though she has plenty of room to run and play inside our fenced-in yard, she is obsessed with trying to attack the tires crunching against our gravel driveway whenever someone drives on our property. As a result, she had her second unfortunate encounter with a moving vehicle, about the same time I started my healthy eating plan. I wept like a baby when I saw her, but other than a broken front leg, a severely scraped up back leg, and a nose with half the flesh missing, she fared okay. Mercy. The vet informed us that in order for her leg to properly heal, we'd have to keep her calm for 3 weeks. I asked if he could give her some nerve pills and throw in a few for me, too. I am not beyond borrowing some of my dog's medicine if it keeps me from going crazy. Because that's exactly where I thought I might be headed, having just been handed the assignment to keep my dog still for 3 weeks. It would be a challenge to keep Chelsea still for 3 minutes, but 3 weeks? Well, 2 weeks into the healing journey, all that stillness got the best of sweet Chelsea in the middle of the night. She decided she would punish me with a fit of whining, crying, and banging my closed bathroom door. She wanted out, and she wanted out now. She wanted to run and chase some unsuspecting night creature. The temptation was too strong, and she was sick of sacrificing her freedom. To be honest, I wanted her to be able to run and chase a night creature, too. Oh, did I ever! But my love for this dog would not permit me to allow her to harm herself. Her brokenness couldn't handle that kind of freedom. Not yet. And as I tossed and turned in the wee hours of the morning, the truth behind the statement about Chelsea's brokenness struck me as quite applicable to myself as well. My brokenness couldn't handle freedom with food outside the boundaries of my plan. Not yet. Eventually, I will be able to add some things back into my diet in small quantities, but not yet. My brokenness with food runs deep. I am a girl who begged God to send a magic fat-burning pill down from heaven because I just could not find the willpower to fight this battle on my own. Y'all, I prayed for a fat-burning pill. No, I take that back. I begged for a fat-burning pill with tears in my eyes. Not my finest godly girl moment. So, because my brokenness with food runs deep, my new healthy habits have to have time to run even deeper. Here are some of the healthy boundaries I have set to ensure success on my healthy eating adventure. For your convenience, I've also included these at the end of the book, pages 215 through 216, for a quick reference guide after you've finished reading. I highly recommend reading through these often. They've really proven to be helpful for me to stay in a good place with my healthy habits. God has given me power over my food choices. I hold the power, not the food. So if I'm not supposed to eat it, I won't put it in my mouth. I was made for more than being stuck in a vicious cycle of defeat. I am not made to be a victim of my poor choices. I was made to be a victorious child of God. When I am struggling and considering a compromise, I will force myself to think past this moment and ask myself, how will I feel about this choice tomorrow morning? If I am in a situation where the temptation is overwhelming, I will have to choose to either remove the temptation or remove myself from the situation. When I am invited to a party or another special occasion rolls around, I can find ways to celebrate that don't involve blowing my healthy eating plan. Struggling with my weight isn't God's mean curse for me. Being overweight is an outside indication that internal changes are needed for my body to function properly and for me to feel well. I have these boundaries in place not for restriction, but to define the parameters of my freedom. My brokenness can't handle more freedom than this right now, and I'm good with that. This battle is hard, really hard. Whether you are staring at a church-covered dish table heavy-laden with all things breaded, fried, and smothered in cheese, or you are standing in a restaurant staring up at a chips and salsa poster, it can feel like a war is being raged in your head. So, I pray these boundaries help you like they've helped me. It breaks my heart that so many of God's girls feel powerless in this struggle. Let's band together. Get honest. Grab hold of the truths that will set us free and do something about it. Victory is possible, sisters. Not by figuring out how to make this an easy process, but by choosing over and over and over and over again the absolute power available through God's truth. Personal Reflections. 1. Congratulations. You've been chosen to participate in the latest reality TV show. How much would your eating change if you knew that dozens of tiny hidden cameras were strategically placed throughout your home, car, and workplace, recording everything you ate and broadcasting it live on a local cable channel? Would your eating change a little or a lot if you knew that nothing you ate was secret? 2. As Lisa was modifying her eating, she had to flee some temptations because her brokenness could not handle certain freedoms. What areas of brokenness in your life aren't yet capable of handling freedoms? How do you typically respond to temptations in these areas? 3. When it comes to boundaries with food, it's important to focus on what we can have rather than what we can't have. When you think of what you can have right now, for what 3 to 5 foods are you most grateful? How might focusing on these foods keep you from dwelling on the foods you can't have right now? 4. Lisa describes 7 healthy boundaries that are helping her on her eating adventure. For each of the boundaries listed, place an X on the continuum to indicate whether the boundary feels more like a punishing restriction or a hedge of safety for you. God has given me power over my food choices. I hold the power, not the food. So if I'm not supposed to eat it, I won't put it in my mouth. This boundary feels like a punishing restriction. This boundary feels like a hedge of safety. I was made for more than being stuck in a vicious cycle of defeat. I'm not made to be a victim of my poor choices. I was made to be a victorious child of God. This boundary feels like a punishing restriction. This boundary feels like a hedge of safety. When I am struggling and considering a compromise, I will force myself to think past this moment and ask myself, how will I feel about this choice tomorrow morning? This boundary feels like a punishing restriction. This boundary feels like a hedge of safety. When faced with an overwhelming temptation, I will either remove the temptation or remove myself from the situation. This boundary feels like a punishing restriction. This boundary feels like a hedge of safety. When I'm invited to a party or another special occasion rolls around, I can find ways to celebrate that don't involve blowing my healthy eating plan. This boundary feels like a punishing restriction. This boundary feels like a hedge of safety. Struggling with my weight isn't God's mean curse for me. Being overweight is an outside indication that internal changes are needed for my body to function properly and for me to feel well. This boundary feels like a punishing restriction. This boundary feels like a hedge of safety. I have these boundaries in place not for restriction, but to define the parameters of my freedom. My brokenness can't handle more freedom than this right now, and I'm good with that. This boundary feels like a punishing restriction. This boundary feels like a hedge of safety. Take a moment to review your responses. What do they reveal about how you view boundaries? Which boundary feels most like a restriction? Is this something you've struggled with before? What boundary feels most like safety? How might you lean into this boundary to give you strength and confidence with the boundaries that might be harder for you to keep? Chapter 16. Why Diets Don't Work. I have issues with infomercials. I do. They suck me in and make me a believer in slick slogans and paid actors giving fake testimonials. I've ordered everything from grout cleaner to face powder, magic cleaning cloths to veggie steamers, and a meat griller that practically promised to grab the meat out of my fridge and cook it with absolutely no effort on my part. However, no infomercials grab my attention quite like diet ones, with big promises and little sacrifice, you too can be a size smaller by this afternoon. And while everything in my brain screams, it's a scam, something in my heart says, but maybe this one is the sure thing. Maybe this one really will make me feel so full. I can eat 3 peas and a half chicken breast and be satisfied until dinner. Maybe this one really will block every bit of fat I consume from being absorbed in my body, thus allowing me to eat, eat, eat without gaining, gaining, gaining. In the end, though, my rational mind helps my wishful thinking taste buds put the phone down, slip my credit card back into my wallet, and make peace with reality. There are no quick fixes. But I have to hand it to them. These infomercial people are smart because they figured out a way to tap into the harsh reality of why diets fail. We get tired of sacrificing and our self-effort wears thin. I know what that feels like. I'm not on a diet. Just today I was walking through the Chicago airport with some apple slices in my purse for a snack. I was perfectly happy with my apples. Until I walked past a smell that grabbed me by the collar, got right in my face and said, "Don't you know how much happier I can make you?" A shop called Nuts on Clark had just made a fresh batch of caramel popcorn. I love caramel popcorn, and I could easily rationalize purchasing some. I can't get this brand in North Carolina. It could be my special Chicago treat. How much could it really hurt to consume one bag of caramel popcorn? Lots of other people were getting it. Really, I could have gotten the popcorn, eaten a few handfuls and saved the rest for my kids, and been perfectly fine with my little diet cheat. The problem is, I'm not on a diet. Diets don't work for me. I seem to be able to sacrifice for a season, and then I get tired of sacrificing. I hit my goal weight and then slowly slip back into old habits. The weight creeps back on and I feel like a failure. Like I said, diets don't work for me. So, I'm not on a diet. I'm on a journey with Jesus to learn the fine art of self-discipline for the purpose of holiness. And today I decided ahead of time I would have apples for a snack, not caramel popcorn. Deciding ahead of time what I will and will not eat is a crucial part of this journey. I also try to plan my meals right after breakfast when I'm feeling full and satisfied. Deciding in advance keeps my thinking and planning rational and on track. The absolute worst time for me to decide what I'm going to eat is when I've waited until I'm depleted and feeling very hungry. At that point, my body is screaming for something quick, and usually quick things come in a full variety of unhealthy temptations. Here's a biblical perspective on temptation. If you think you are standing strong, be careful not to fall. The temptations in your life are no different from what others experience, and God is faithful. He will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. When you are tempted, He will show you a way out so that you can endure. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 12 through 13, NLT. The way out the Lord provides for me is deciding in advance what I will and will not have each day. Now, here's another interesting part to all this. Keeping this verse in context, verse 14 of this same chapter goes on to say, "Therefore, my dear friends, flee from idolatry," NIV. Oh, how this verse points a finger straight at my personal issues with food and says, this is exactly why this has to be a spiritual journey and not a temporary diet. Expecting anything outside the will of God to satisfy us is idolatry. Nutrition, which is food's intended purpose, means consuming proper portions of healthy choices that enable our bodies to function properly. Idolatry, in the case of food, means the consumption of ill-sized portions and unhealthy choices because we feel like we deserve it or need it to feel better. Now, hear me on this. We aren't to flee food. We need food. But we are to flee the control food can have over our lives. If we flee from the pattern of idolizing food and stop depending on food to make us feel emotionally better, we will be able to more clearly see the way out God promises to provide when we are tempted. Two elephants in the room. At this point in the chapter, as we're talking about those feelings of deserving certain foods or needing a treat to get by, I think it quite appropriate to address two elephants in the room. Elephant number one. It's my party and I'll eat cake if I want to. Don't tell me I have to give up all treats for all time. I'm not saying we have to give up all treats for all time. When I was working toward getting to a healthy weight, I did give up all sugar and starchy carbs for a season. When I reached my goal weight, I added some things back to my eating, but did so very carefully. Note the words some and carefully. I'm not saying that enjoying these occasional treats is wrong. Now that I'm at my goal weight, if I were to decide in advance to have popcorn at the movies, then I would have a small popcorn, no butter. For the next several days, I would be more careful with my healthy eating regimen and pass on adding in any treats. I can't go back to my old habits of thinking I deserved a special treat every day. The realities of diet failure speak loudly and clearly that returning to old habits will cause the weight I've lost to return as well. A study reported in the Journal of the American Medical Association compared a 2-year weight loss among 65 men and 358 women of various weights, but all considered obese, randomly assigned to two different diets. After the first year, the average weight loss was about 9.5 pounds on one program versus just under 3 pounds on self-help. But at the 2-year mark, the average participant had regained some of the weight lost, so the net loss was 6.4 pounds for one versus half a pound for the other. Here are some comments from the research team. Although we drew the conclusion that the first program was more effective than the other, it doesn't take a degree in statistics to realize that the diet program failed to produce a significant and lasting weight loss. This is the first real clinical proof of what we've been saying all along. Diets are not effective as long-term strategy for weight loss, in part because people regain most or all of the weight they lose. If the scientists had followed their subjects for another 3 years, we are certain that the weight regain would have been even more dramatic. Though this journey isn't all about weight loss, weight is a measurable indicator of whether or not we're making healthy choices. These diet failure statistics prove what I've experienced in previous weight loss attempts. Prolonged success is really difficult, which leads me to the second elephant in the room. Elephant number two. I don't think this sounds like a spiritual journey. I think this sounds like a legalistic approach to eating. Please hear my heart on this. I'm not writing this book to set forth legalistic rules about eating. I am writing this book as an invitation to consider the freedom found when we bring one of our most basic of needs, food, before the Lord and allow Him to guide and guard us in this area. We do need a healthy eating plan, which some will refer to as a diet. But we must have a depth of restraint that can only come from making this a spiritual growth journey. Putting all of our hope in religious adherence to a human-designed diet can create a false sense of prideful self-effort, harsh treatment of the body, and, in the end, usually failure. The Apostle Paul addressed this issue when he wrote his letter to the Colossians. Since you died with Christ to the basic principles of this world, why, as though you still belong to it, do you submit to its rules? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. These are all destined to perish with use, because they are based on human commands and teachings. Such regulations indeed have an appearance of wisdom, with their self-imposed worship, their false humility, and their harsh treatment of the body, but they lack any value in restraining sensual indulgence. Colossians chapter 2, verses 20 through 23. In commenting on these verses, Pastor Ray Stedman writes, "A legalist looks at life and says, everything is wrong unless you can prove by the Bible that it is right. Therefore, we must have nothing to do with anything that the Bible does not say is right." That reduces life to a very narrow range of activity. But the biblical Christian looks at life and says, everything is right. God has given us a world to enjoy and live in. Everything is right unless the Bible specifically says it is wrong. Some things are wrong. They are harmful and dangerous. Adultery is always wrong. So is fornication. Sexual promiscuity is wrong. Lying and stealing are wrong. These things are never right. But there is so much that is left open to us. If we are willing to obey God in the areas that He designates as harmful and dangerous, then we have the rest of life to enter into company with a Savior who loves us and who guides and guards us in our walk with Him. I especially love that last sentence. If we are willing to obey God in the areas that He designates as harmful and dangerous, and we learned in the previous chapter that gluttonous behaviors are not just dangerous, they are sinful, then we have the rest of life to enter into company with a Savior who loves us and who guides and guards us in our walk with Him. Entering into company with my Savior is indeed what I must do for this healthy eating spiritual journey to be successful and long-lasting. It's the component that all previous diets I've tried were missing. Even the medical community is starting to pick up on the crucial role of making any weight loss and healthy eating journey a spiritual commitment. Dr. Floyd Chilton, a physiologist who teaches at Wake Forest University School of Medicine, puts it this way. Your willpower is in constant battle with your genes and your calorie-excessive environment. Often your best efforts are no match for your genes and environment, which is why so many diets fail so miserably. Willpower alone is not enough to bring about this change. Start by realizing that you cannot do this alone. If you are a person of faith, use that connection to help you change. I couldn't agree more, Dr. Chilton. God created us and told us to be faithful with the bodies we've been given. The Holy Spirit empowers us to make lasting change. And Jesus lovingly guides and guards us as we walk with Him, moment by moment, choice by choice, day by day. And that's a plan with a promise no infomercial can ever offer. Personal Reflections. 1. Have you ever been lured in by the promises of an infomercial or fad diet? What was it about the diet that appealed to you most? Did it guarantee quick results? Promise you could eat whatever you wanted and still lose weight? What about it made you think, maybe, just maybe this one is a sure thing? How did you feel when it didn't deliver as promised, or you gained back the weight you'd lost? 2. Lisa describes her experiences of diets as sacrificing for a season and then regaining the weight when she gets tired of sacrificing. Instead, she says she is now on a journey with Jesus to learn the fine art of self-discipline for the purpose of holiness. Page 158. What do you think about this distinction between diets and a journey with Jesus? How might your decisions about food and healthy eating change if you could really see them as part of a spiritual journey rather than a diet? Is this an idea that feels possible for you or unrealistic? Why? Number 3. God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. This is a promise with which many of us who grew up in church are very